comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate it. I'm here because you have a right to know. I'm here because you matter. We have a brand new feature on the website. In fact, there's a little bit different look to the website. If you've been over there, you've noticed that. KevinSmithShow.com. If you haven't been over, be sure you get over and take a look at it. Let me know what you think about it. But there's a brand new feature there, and it is called Featured Show. Now, what that is a featured show. I picked a show that we had a lot of requests for, and I've uploaded the video of that show, and it is a featured show. Now, I'm not going to change it every week, although I might change it next week. It might be next month. We'll see, but it gives you the opportunity, if you've never been able to watch the Kevin Smith Show, it gives you the opportunity to see what it is you are missing. You know, that's, you have to be a member if you want to watch the show. It's free to listen, and we have millions of people around the world listening right now in over 140 countries. But you could be watching. If you are a member, then you could be watching. And sometimes that's especially important, because I sometimes put up pictures and graphics and maps and things that really help us to see what it is we happen to be talking about that night. Sometimes the guests provide us with pictures and we use those. But anyway, enjoy it. All you have to do is get over there and click it. It is a Flash video. It is not HTML5. Some of your phones will play that and some will not. And if you're wondering, well, why don't you just go ahead and get with the times and do HTML5? It's because HTML5 is not with the times. HTML5 is three different formats, and so I would have to convert one video into three separate different formats and upload three separate different formats. And HTML5 encoding takes three times longer. So until they resolve that and get it all down to one format, HTML5 won't be here. It's Flash. Flash rules the internet. But it's free, so get over and take a look at it. And on your computer, you should have no problems with that. But now look. We are 100% member supported. That means that though it's free to listen every night, somebody's paying the bill for you. Some member has joined, some person has joined, become a member. They're paying $7.50 a month. That's all, 25 cents a day. And for that, you get your, you get to watch the show, you get your own blog, your own photo album, friends page, all kinds of stuff. $7.50 a month, and you get to watch the show. Nobody can fix it but you. Please do tonight. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Jim Mars is my guest tonight. Jim has been a guest here a couple of times before. And, you know, he is well known throughout our genre and other genres as well. But he's an award-winning journalist, and he's also a world-renowned author, and has an interesting mixture of books, an interesting mixture of topics. First, let me welcome Jim Mars back to the show, and then I want to get into that just a little bit. Jim, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hey, Kevin. Howdy.
Hi.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Jim, I just mentioned this interesting mixture that you have of topics that you write about. You've written some really heavyweight books in our genre, for instance, Alien Agenda, just to pick one. But you also write some heavyweight political books as well. So here's my question. You know, sometimes the world of the strange and unexplained intersects with the world of politics, and sometimes they collide, and then sometimes they seem like they're in different universes. So what is it about Jim Mars that you have an interest in dealing with both of those? Where does that come from?
Well, I guess that's because I'm a conspiracy eclectic. Or maybe I'm a eclectic conspiracist. But the main thing is that it's all one big ball of wax. You can't really separate one without the other. Kevin, I try to tell people all the time, if you don't pay any attention to UFOs or extraterrestrials, if you think that's all just bourgeois and that there's nothing to it, and you totally ignore that issue, you'll never figure out what's actually going on the planet Earth.
Why is that?
Because it's all intertwined. If you know as well as I do, and I know your well-informed and esteemed audience knows that historically there is the evidence for extraterrestrial contact on this planet goes back to biblical days and thousands of years even before that. So, you know, if that's the case, then they've somehow played a role, even if it's just as observers, in all of human history. So you can't just write that off and act like it's not there.
Well, I would agree. Also, there is this intersection of UFOs with politics in something called black projects, black budget items, and so forth, where literally trillions of dollars just flood into and out of the wealth and treasury of the nation. And part of that, a great part of it, has to do with these UFOs. And has to do with black budget projects to emulate and to replicate what the UFOs are able to do. And so there
we want
is
their technology. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that intersection. And now let me ask you this: is that the reason we have so much trouble getting the government to disclose what they know about UFOs? Because in so doing, they might have to turn the lights on in some black budget stuff.
Exactly. You're asking them to reveal some of their most highly secret weapons testing, you know, and this is what really bothers me and a lot of other people. You know, Kevin, while we're all sitting here talking on the Kevin Smith Show, somewhere deep underground in some deep secret government laboratory, they are tinkering with the basic building blocks of the universe. Now, that's pretty spooky.
Well, it is. And as a matter of fact, this week we've had the announcement, last week we had the announcement out of the Large Hadron Collider folks, that they have discovered the God particle.
Right. I hope they don't drop it.
Well, you know, what they are saying is that they are trying to replicate the conditions that would have existed in the non-universe at the point of the Big Bang. Okay, so I think the Big Bang theory is hooey. I really, really do. I think it's nonsense. However, having
you're
said...
You're not the only one.
Well,
you're not the only one, Kevin.
Well,
in fact, there was a big article in one of the mainstream science magazines there not too long back, questioning the Big Bang.
Well, I find it you know, they teach you in science class that it's laughable to believe in spontaneous generation. And that's where, you know, you throw some grain down on some wet rags in the cellar and it makes mice. Spontaneously, just spontaneously generates something. And they tell you that's a laughable theory, and yet the Big Bang theory is spontaneous generation, and it's something from nothing. There was a nothing that exploded. Okay,
right.
But let's just say that let's say I'm wrong about this. I don't think I am, but let's say I am. And let's say the Big Bang actually happened, and that it was something infinitesimally small that exploded, and from that came all the matter in the universe. That's the Big Bang theory. All right, if they do that in that Large Hadron Collider, what kind of consequences will there be for those who are standing near the explosion, like Earth?
Like all of us? Well, let me just, to soothe your anxiety, let me just remind you that in 1945, when they set off the first atomic bomb at Alamogordo, New Mexico, more than half the scientists involved in the Manhattan Project sincerely believed that once they started a chain reaction, they would not be able to stop it. It would ignite the atmosphere and would incinerate the entire world. But they set it off anyway. Aren't we glad they were wrong?
Yes, and
that's exactly what I was talking about. They're tinkering with the basic building blocks of the universe, and I just hope they're being very careful about that. Now, my personal theory as to the Big Bang was that the entire universe started off as nothing but an energy field, a field of energy. And it had a negative pole and a positive pole, like all energy. And as science tells us, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It just is. It can change form. And I think at some point, this energy field, which probably had self-aware consciousness, said, well, what happens if I really put my mind to it? And they, with just sheer willpower, they pulled in all this energy and kept pulling it in and condensing it and condensing it and scrunching it down until whammo, they created matter. And once they created matter, it came under the purview of all of the laws of matter. And when you get that type of energy involved with that infinitesimal amount of matter, you're probably going to get an explosion.
Possible.
That's what I see, but what am I? I'm just a conspiracy theorist.
Well, one thing is for sure. Nobody was there when it happened, so nobody knows exactly how it happened. So tinkering with the building blocks of it could have devastating results.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, there's, you know...
When they created... For example, when they created the atomic bomb, they had no idea of the radiation that that would release and how dangerous that could be. And that's why in the late 40s, early 50s, when they were setting off above ground atomic explosions in the Southwest, they would march our military soldiers just right up to within a few hundred yards of the bomb blast, put them in a trench, you know, and say, hey, don't look at the blast, you know, because they never thought about the consequences of radiation. But today, all you have to do is look at the statistics of the rising rates of cancers, and we see that there are consequences of radiation.
In this quest, that the military certainly would deny that there is such a quest, and yet there is some evidence that the quest is on, to replicate the abilities of what we call UFOs. In this quest to do that kind of stuff, and applying the, it's not theory, it's fact, that the true state of technology, which is, of course, available to the military, the true state of technology, the true state of science, being in some cases as much as 100 years advanced of what the public knows, but in almost all cases it's at least 40 years advanced. So
that's right. That's why for example, right now you can go watch some Air Force recruiting videos, and everybody knows about Global Hawk technology, where they can remotely send a missile over, and then this remote Global Hawk can even fire missiles and attack targets, you know, as far away as Afghanistan, with the controller, you know, sitting in Cheyenne Mounting or in Fort Huachuca or somewhere like Las Vegas, I think, is where some of them are controlled by. And yet, in 2001... nobody really knew that this technology existed, even though they've been using it since the 80s. And, you know, what a beautiful thing that is, because if you have technology that's 10, 20 years ahead of what's publicly known, and you utilize it, then you can make up any cover story you want to, and there's really hardly anybody that can argue with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we take that knowledge, that the true state of our technology is way, way ahead of what we know, what you and I know, and we apply that to this quest to replicate what UFOs can do, do you think we're there? Do you think that we absolutely have UFOs that we've built that can do the things that we've been seeing for centuries?
Personally, I think we do have replicated UFOs. They're called ARVs, alien replica vehicles. But I'm not sure that we've advanced enough to make them do everything that the non-human UFOs can do. But you can go back. You can take the case down near Houston. Back in, I believe, the 80s, early 80s, where the couple got irradiated, and the little boy and the women turned up with, you know, radiation burns and everything else.
The Cash Landrum affair,
mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I was told by some of my sources within the military that this was a case of, oh, and by the way, there were helicopters hovering all around it, right? This was a case of where they had taken a captured UFO and tried to put a nuclear reactor in it to see if they could make it an atomic-powered craft, and it didn't work very well.
Mm-hmm. So that was actually, according to your sources, that was actually a captured UFO that they had put a new engine in, so to speak.
Right, because they couldn't make the original power plant work. And that's because the UFOs, this is what kills me, even today, with some few exceptions, when you see these fantastic science fiction epics like Star Wars, for example, we still have these wonderful, sleek-looking rocket ship things, but they're still rocket ships. You still see something firing and something pushing it along, you know. Mm-hmm. That's so old school. Now, the UFOs operate, they ride energy waves, and they're within energy fields. By the way, this is why that according to all the UFO literature, when a UFO comes over, the car engine stops, the radio goes off, okay, all the electrical appliances stop. Mm-hmm. That's because it comes into their energy field. And when they're inside their energy field, then gravity ceases to exist and nothing electrical is going to work. And then as soon as the energy field goes away, then the car engine starts again. But here's the clincher. If you study those reports closely, you'll find that nobody ever says that the UFO went away, and so they turned the key and started the starter, and it went rah, rah, boom, and the car starts up. No, it just the car suddenly goes back to running. And that means when the energy field comes over, those pistons have frozen. Time has stopped within that energy field. And then when it moves on, the pistons go back to banging, the car's running again. This also could explain the whole issue of missing time, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Sure.
Excuse me.
Jim, have you ever had missing time?
I started to make a funny story about only after some weekends, but no. Actually, no, I don't believe so.
You know, that's what's
again,
in the box.
But then again, I can't even say I've seen a flying saucer. I've seen some weird lights in the sky.
And, you know, missing time is what's in the bottom of a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Exactly. That's what I was getting to. But no, that's only the closest I've probably come. But, you know, you hear the stories. You know, the guy says, hey, I saw this UFO, and it was 6 o'clock, and then it went away, and the car was running, and I raced home, and I only lived 10 minutes away, but when I got home, it was 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd the time go? He was in the energy field, and for him, time stopped.
Well, that makes sense.
In fact, I can tell you a very fascinating story I heard from an experiencer. I prefer to call them that. I don't really like the word abductees.
Well, I tell you what, let's hold that story until we come back from break, because we do have a break coming up here in, let's see, about 37 seconds. And I'd hate for you to get into that story and then we'd have to interrupt it and then pick it up again later. Sometimes we do that, but it's a good place for us to take the break, and we'll do that. And then, folks, when we come back, let's remind our guest tonight, Jim Mars, that he was about to tell us a story. Jim, it's up to you to remember which story, okay? All right, folks, we're going to step away for a break. We'll be gone for just a couple of minutes, and then we'll be back. During that couple of minutes, get over to the website and take a look and tell me what you think about the new look. All right, we shall return right after this.
And you are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
What just happened was the had some electrical interference and the TV software just jammed up, and so we had to restart it. Sorry about that if you're watching, but you should be rejoining us right about now. We're talking with Jim Mars, and Jim, as we went away for break, you were about to tell us a story.
Yeah, great story. Okay. I wonder if your electrical interference has anything to do with that huge solar storm they just had. They said there would be some repercussions, but who knows? The story that I want to tell you is, because this is fascinating, because as the scientists are now finding out, gravity is somehow intertwined with time. And if you affect one, you can affect the other. So some years ago, I was speaking to a fellow up in the Northeast who was an experiencer. He said he had been taken aboard ships ever since he was a young boy, and that at first, of course, he'd been quite terrified, but after a while, he said he just kind of got used to it. It's like, oh, well, here we go again. And he said one night he was reclining on his couch watching TV when he decided he'd get up and go get himself a soft drink. And so he walked around into his kitchen area, opened the refrigerator, got out a can of something, I'm sure, because he said he popped the top, walked back in, laid back on his couch, and pretty quickly got this feeling like, oh, no, it's going to happen again. And sure enough, the next thing you know, he woke up on a ship, and they were doing the usual poking and prodding and, you know, just the usual stuff. And after a while, the next thing he knew, he was back lying on his couch in his home watching, and the TV was still on. And he said, but just as he was beginning to relax and think, yes, I'm back, he heard somebody in his kitchen open the refrigerator, and he heard a can top pop. And he told me that just in the time it took for him to register this, he looked up and he saw himself coming around the corner from the kitchen. And he said, but then this figure just immediately dissolved, and he was just back on the couch. Now, assuming he's telling a truthful story, what that tells me is that they had goofed and had brought him back, you know, just a little bit too soon. Otherwise, you know, if you can get it right, he would be, they took him from the couch, he'd be back on the couch, and that was it. But they brought him back a little bit too soon, and he was there to see himself, hear himself open a can and walk around the corner back into the living room. Isn't that a fascinating story? And I think it gives us some insight into some of the aspects of these so-called abductions. And I think it also now expands the question, do some of these people come from some other planet or some other star system, to do they come from another time period? Could they be time travelers?
They actually could be both.
Could be all of the above.
Yeah,
absolutely. In fact, I suspect that's the case. Well, and that's why that it's fruitless, I think, to be asking a question like, are they good or are they bad? Because to me, that's like looking up and seeing an airliner go over, and you know it's full of people, and you say, are they good or are they bad? Well, you probably got a pretty good mix in there, don't you think?
Yeah, some of both. Some of both.
Yeah, little of
there
both.
Seems to be, Jim, evidence that we are being visited, and that we are being visited by a number of groups, not just one.
Right.
And let's say some of them are time travelers. Perhaps they are us in the future coming back here. Some are time travelers, but extraterrestrial. Some may be extraterrestrial, real time, instead of time travelers. So we've got all of this stuff going on, and in fact, we have had guests on this show who claim to be in the know and offered some evidence to that effect, and have said that there are as many as 57 different groups that visit here. Okay, yeah. Well, let's just assume that all of that's true. What's the reason this is such an interesting place for all these people? Why are they all coming here?
Well, my theory, and it is just a theory, is that I would think that on most of the planets in the universe, that they grew up as a homogenous society. In other words, there were, you know, the pod people on Zeta Reticula 4, they started off as pod people and they progressed and evolved as pod people. Now, on the Earth, the thing that's made the United States of America one of the most richest, powerful, most advanced nations in the world is because we're a polyglot. Okay, we're a polyglot of people, a blending of races and cultures and people from all over the earth who've all ended up in North America, and the combination has created this incredible United States of America. And I think that probably the earth is a macrocosm of that same type of situation. I think that back in our past history, in prehistory, back at the time of Atlantis, Mu, Lemuria, whatever you want to call them, all the civilizations that have existed on this planet. And I think at one time that there was extraterrestrial presence here, and I think that they were probably manipulating the DNA of Earth primitives and to create their worker race or whatever they were doing, or just their experiments. And I think that we, the human race, is kind of a polyglot of, you know, look at just physically, you know, look at the physical difference between, say, an African or an Asian or a European, and then all the various blends in between. And I think that we are, I don't want to say unique, but I think we are kind of a showcase of the universe, because I think we represent a varied race of people that probably most of them are not used to. Plus, we have this free will, and we have something that I think is, I've been told, and I agree, one of our biggest weapons against these non-humans is humor, okay? We can laugh, and we can just, you know, we laugh in the face of death, you know. I'm reminded of a story during the Korean War, I believe it was, where there was a British officer, and a courier ran into him in his dugout, and he said, "Sir, the Chinese are in front of us, and the Chinese are gotten in our rear, and they're to our right, and they're to our left flank also." And he said, with the typical British stiff upper lip, he said, "Well, they shan't get away from us this time." It's that kind of laugh at the face of death humor, I think, that they just don't get it. They don't grok it. You know, it's like, what's with these crazy people? And I think maybe they just come here to check all that out. I know when I was in graduate school at Texas Tech out in Lubbock, Texas, and Lubbock, Texas has some wonderful people out there, but it is the hottest, driest, dustiest place you ever want to be, and there's not much to do. And on the weekends, a lot of the college kids and the townspeople too, they would go visit Prairie Dog Town. That was the thing to do. You'd go and park your cars in a line and get with your girlfriend and sit on the hood or the fender and watch the prairie dogs, you know. Look at that little guy. Oh, look at that one running, jumping in the hole. Ha ha, aren't they funny? Well, I think some of these people may be coming here just to watch the prairie dogs.
Well, they may be, and I got to tell you, I know I've never been. You said Lubbock.
Yep, Lubbock, Texas.
I've flown over Lubbock, but I've never been to Lubbock.
That's
but I have
the best
been all
way
up
to,
in that part
the best
of the
way
panhandle.
To do it.
Yeah, I have been all up in that part of the panhandle, and you know, my goodness, there's nothing in that whole end of Texas to do. But
that's right.
You know, you're desperate when you go out and watch the prairie dogs.
Yeah, pretty desperate. That doesn't speak well for the rest of the universe if that's the case, does it?
Well, that's right.
I mean, if they got nothing better to do than to come and watch us, you know, act up, then it must be pretty dull out in the rest of the universe.
It might be. It just might be.
Well, it might be. I mean, if you've grown up, for example, say on a planet where where you have a hive mentality, okay, and everybody's connected to everybody else, and so the upside of it is that, you know, well, nobody can lie to you because you already know they're lying, and you know what the truth is because you know what everybody knows, and you can probably communicate telepathically. You don't have to fumble for words or try to figure out how to sound literate, you know. But the downside is that everybody knows everything. You know, you can't tell anybody a joke because they all know it, you know. So, I mean, it's got to be kind of a boring place.
It would have to be. Now, you are, as I said at the top of the show, an award-winning journalist. And, you know, you are well-known all over the world as an author. And the question I've got now has to do with other people in the media and you. So here you are, award-winning journalist, well-known author, well-educated, famous guy, and you talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials as matter-of-factly as I do, and you would expect it from me because I host a talk show about it.
Right.
And yet we see in the media not very serious treatment of this information, if any treatment at all. Sometimes it's just, most of the time, it's just completely ignored. What kind of...
Why is that?
Well, I have my... I have soapboxes I get on about why that is, but how do they treat you? How are you received amongst other journalists?
Oh, I'm the Ron Paul of journalists, you know. In the old Soviet Union, they had people that were referred to as non-persons, because once they fell out of favor with the party and they didn't toe the party line, well, then they became non-persons. You know, mm-hmm. No, forget him. Just don't even talk about him. You know, we're not going to pay attention to him. Forget him. Yeah, and I will have to admit that most of my awards, not all, but most, were gained during my newspaper career, and not after I began to write on very esoteric and eclectic topics. It's really kind of interesting, but here's the thing that you and your listeners need to remind yourself of constantly. There is no news media in the United States anymore. There is only corporate advertising distribution systems. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to get some truthful information in that process, well, so much the better for you. But no, there is. I was reading a thing the other day from, I forget the name of this thing. You may know about it. It's a website that you can send a press release to, mm-hmm. and then they see that it gets distributed to all the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw an article not long back that was quoting one of the guys that works for this website.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break, and we'll pick up right there when we come back. All right, folks, more in a moment. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jim Mars. And Jim, as we went away for break, you were about to tell us you were reading something about a guy, I think you said, that worked for one of these press release websites.
And what struck me is something that I myself have noticed. Back in the day, the newspapers and the radio stations, as a general rule, would rewrite the press releases. But this fellow was saying that he more and more was seeing his own press releases printed or published or broadcast without even trying to rewrite them. They just grab them and print them. Well, that's not journalism. Back Journalism 101, I was taught, hey, try to look behind the official pronouncements and look behind the, you know, government press releases and corporate press releases and try to find out what's really going on, but apparently that's not happening anymore.
Well, there's not much journalism happening, that is for sure. And what is happening that passes for journalism these days is bilge water, mostly. You know, if you want to know what's going on in America, you've got to get a website, a news site outside America in order to know what's going on here.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In my travels to other countries, it's always amazed me that they seem to have a better handle on what's really going on in the United States than the people who live here.
Yeah.
But you were talking also about how that it's amazing how the media, for the longest period, it's slowly changing a little bit, but especially since the incidents over Stephenville, Texas, back in 2009, but or 2008, but. Up till then, any time they mentioned UFOs, it was usually accompanied by a snicker, you know, like, you know, I'm surprised we're even talking about this. Well, I'll tell you an experience I had, which was brought this really home. I once was sitting at a table with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, one of the astronauts, Apollo astronauts, and I was dying to ask him about what he had to say about extraterrestrials, you know, UFOs, but I didn't want to get in his face, and I didn't want to sound too outlandish to him. So while I was sitting there trying to think how I might broach the subject to him, somebody else at the table jumped right in and asked him, and he began to reply, and we began to have a conversation. And the next thing I knew, I kind of stepped out of myself, and I said, wait a minute, you know, I'm sitting here talking to the sixth man who walked on the moon, and we're talking about aliens and extraterrestrials, you know, as matter-of-factly as if we were talking about the weather. And Kevin, I have found this to be true when I speak with people in the military, high-ranking officers, with politicians who have who may very well have had every reason to know some things, and others, air traffic controllers, pilots, and you don't find that ridicule factor. They know it's all for real. You only get the ridicule factor from your mother and your dad or your next door neighbor, or particularly what really gets me are the academics who act like, well, that's not even a subject worth discussing. But they are so far wrong, and they are so far have their heads buried so far in the sand that they don't realize that they're missing out on a huge issue that's very real and very pertinent to what's happening in the world today.
I was talking with a reporter from a very, very well-known international news agency, and we were actually having lunch together, and I brought this subject up about why does the media treat it like that, and he gave me a lot of, you know, media doublespeak about, there's so many of these stories are just anecdotal, there's no evidence. I said, wait a minute, there's mountains of evidence.
Exactly.
There are miles and miles of footage from gun cameras on military airplanes. There's radar tracking. I said, but let me tell you what I think. He said, okay. I said, you're a reporter, and you think that it's your job to go out and gather the news and get the very, very best that you can, and then present it to the people, right? He said, right. I said, okay, Central Park, a 747. You hear about a 747 has crashed in Central Park. So you and the camera crew go running out to Central Park. I said, you're going to be willing to even risk your life to get up close and personal and get the story. He said, well, yeah. I said, and when you get there, you find it's a round disc and not a 747. What are you going to do? I said, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You turn the camera off and you're going to walk away. You're not going to report it.
Right. Let me explain this, having been in the media for 50 years. This is not really the fault of the individual reporters. Most of the reporters I know are honest, hard-working folks, and he or she would just love to get that story, and they might, in your illustration, they might even take some film, and they might even try to get some information down. Excuse me. But when they go back to the TV station and their assignment editor said, we don't want to hear about a UFO, because he's already taken the cue from the people above him in corporate that we don't want to air anything about UFOs. And that's where it gets scotched. And then the reporter then has two choices. He can keep pressing for it and risk losing his job and his status, or he can sit down and shut up and just go along with the official policy, which is what most of them unfortunately do.
Well, and, you know, on the one hand, I would say, you know, I mean, I have the one view that says, well, you know, get a spine, stand up and be a man, and if it costs you, it costs you. On the other hand, he still wouldn't get that story on the air.
No.
And would have lost his job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes...
it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, there's no way to win.
But this is changing somewhat. As I mentioned, the Stephenville experience there a couple of years ago, that it was really amazing because here's just a lot of country folks who would probably have been easy enough to make fun of, and yet there were so many of them, and they were so sincere, and they had videotapes, and they had camera photos, and later we even got radar readings, okay? And for the first time, the media, particularly in Texas, and actually even nationwide, they kind of reported it as a legitimate story, and was asking, gee, I wonder what that was. And of course, initially, the Air Force said, no, we didn't have any aircraft in the area at that time. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, oh, well, wait a minute, we did have 50 F-16s on a training mission. 50? See, now, again, this shows how gullible they think we are. I've been in the military, and I've been an aviation aerospace writer, and I can assure you, short of World War III, you're not going to see 50 F-16s in the air at one time. Okay? They travel in pairs. Think 9/11 when the F-16s went up. Two at a time. Okay? That's what they do. You don't have 50 flying around any one time.
Well, I'll tell you something else.
Horse bucky just to begin with. Okay? Why? And why? But somebody felt like they had to put up a cover story. Why?
Well, there's another angle on what you just told us, and that's this. Do they expect us to believe they could have 50 up and forget about it?
Yeah, we didn't know. We didn't know they were there. They didn't tell us what they were doing, so we didn't ask. 50 of them up there in the ATC, the air traffic controllers, they don't know they're up there. Come on. I mean, you know, it's... one of the reasons they had to come up with a cover story is because about a year later or so, when they managed to get radar data from Stephenville, they found that one object was almost a mile in length and at one was traveling at various speeds, but at one point they tracked it going about 30 miles an hour. Well, excuse me, anybody knows anything about flight knows that you got to have airspeed, which is in a very light little plane, is at least 80, 90 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Okay? You can't stay in the air at 30 miles an hour.
Yeah, a little.
So, the general public probably doesn't know that, so they can go, oh, well, never mind about that.
Even a little Cessna two-seater, a Cessna 150, Cessna 152,
yeah,
stall speed is below 70. I mean,
yeah,
it can't go
30
miles an hour.
You're going below 70, it stalls and drops.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't go 30 miles an hour and stay in there. But that's what the radar data was showing, this mile-long object over Stephenville, Texas, back in 2008. Come on, folks. Wake up and smell the extraterrestrial coffee.
Well, you seem completely comfortable with the subject.
Well, like I said, as far as I know, I've never seen a UFO, but I have seen some strange lights in the sky, but I'm not going to try to convince anything.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted that you are here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for the first hour. And I sincerely hope that whatever it is will never bother you again, so that you'll never have to miss another first hour of the Kevin Smith Show, because when you do, you miss two or three universes of information. My guest this evening is Jim Mars, and we've been talking about a lot of things related to UFOs, but most recently about the role of media with UFOs. And Jim, listen, my audience would tell you, they could probably quote for you my speeches I make about the media when it comes to reporting on UFOs and reporting on extraterrestrial things. But I had said, you know, you seem very comfortable with it, but now let's go back in time. Let's time travel. And let's go back to a point before you had started writing about UFOs and extraterrestrials. Is there a time back there where you just thought it was fantasy?
No. Come think of it, even when I was in the fifth and sixth grade, I was an avid reader, and I was reading all kinds of things, and I was reading science fiction. Robert Heinlein, Ray Bradbury, all those guys, okay? Mm-hmm. Isaac Asimov. And so these concepts were nothing new to me. And then also I have a watercolor painting that I did when I was a teenager, based on an account of a UFO that landed out in West Texas near Levelland, Texas. And I happened to find that a few years back as I was trying to clean out the attic, and I went and checked on the date of the incident in Levelland, and it was 1957. So as far back as 1957, I was intensely interested in UFOs. And then after I wrote my book, Alien Agenda, a friend of mine who had been with me working on the campus newspaper at the University of North Texas, where I was the editorial page editor, sent me an editorial that I had completely forgotten about. It was written about 1965, and I was editorially saying we should take UFOs seriously because there's too many people who say there's really something there, and I think it needs a serious investigation. So I don't know. I guess I've been with it all along. And as a reporter, I got to interview J. Allen Hynek, and I interviewed a lot of high-ranking politicians and military people. And I think the thing that really got me going, and I can't say I ever had an absolute epiphany, but over a 50-year journalism tour of duty, I came into too many police officers, air traffic controllers, commercial airline pilots, military pilots, private pilots, scientists, that after a while it's like, look, all these people are not nuts and they all aren't making up stories. There's something real there and it's happening now and we need to pay attention to it. So I guess I've always been on board.
You know, it seems like that UFO sightings are picking up. In June, MUFON reported that in June, seven states, the top seven that reported where they got UFO reports, the top seven accounted for 238 sightings in June, with 18 of those being either landings, hoverings, or takeoffs. Now, that's quite a number, 238 in seven states. Some countries don't have...
Yeah, that's just the United States. Now, mm-hmm. Let's go to Mexico, Rio, and South America, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, man, and then start adding them up. See, if there was a real news media, what they would do is have make a little box somewhere in the newspaper that said UFO sightings reported this week. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, but they're not going to do that because right now the average person maybe goes 4, 5, 6 months and then here's one account that somebody somewhere saw this thing. Okay? Well, then they can say, well, they're mistaken or that's some kind of nut. All right? But if you ran a box every day that said latest UFO sightings and you say this week 200, next week 450, last week 185, people would start to catch on and they go, hey, wait a minute, man, there's too many of these things and it's happening continually. There's something going on, and that's what they don't want us to know about. And I don't know if you consider this, Kevin, but here's one of the reasons for the secrecy. Not only do they can they not give up their secret weapons testing, because whatever it is, they want to get a hold of it and use it for military purposes, but also if they ever admit that there are these things flying in our airspace and they're not sure what they are, and they won't stop when they're ordered to, and they can't do anything about it, then maybe people would start rethinking why we're giving about half our yearly budget to the military.
Yeah.
They can't defend us.
Well, they can't defend you against terrorists either.
No, of course not.
They can make things a little bit safer, but...
Right. Yeah, by sticking their hand down your pants, stopping 80-year-old ladies? I don't think so. That's crowd control. That's not terrorist surgery.
Well, that's you're right about that.
I could take care of the terrorist situation. Are there some fanatics in the Middle East who would like to harm our country? Yeah, there are. But I say if left to their own devices, they couldn't afford camel fare to get over here to do anything, okay? And if they did come up with some oil money or some stuff and they were a threat, then look, we could take just a few million dollars, which is a drop in the bucket compared to the billions that we're blowing in Afghanistan and Libya and Syria and these other places, and we hire the Israeli Mossad to tell us where those folks are, and then we send in the Delta team and take them out. End of story. End of terrorists. That'd be the end of that. We could go back to being free Americans, but that isn't happening, is it? So obviously, well, no. Somewhere somebody doesn't want it to end.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in control, and not too much money for those people in freedom. So
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I want the audience to have the opportunity to jump in here and participate with us if they would like to. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm opening the telephone lines. Doesn't matter if you're east of the Rockies or west of the Rockies or even on the Rockies. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Now, if you happen to be outside of the USA and you happen to be outside of Canada, we do understand that making an international long distance call can be expensive, especially from some places. So we invite you to use the flash message option on our website. It's an additional option for those of you who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada. If you're in the USA, if you're in Canada, please use the telephone, 623-444-5889. Your opportunity to talk with one of the absolute premier top authors in our genre. He's not just an author in our genre. He writes about all kinds of things, but he does write books that are in our genre as well, and they are some of the best that have been written.
Say, Kevin, you're going to love my new book that I'm working on right now. It ought to be out right after the first of the year, in which I tie and show the connections between the ancient astronauts and the current New World Order controllers.
Oh.
Does that pique your curiosity?
That does indeed. That does indeed. Is there a little bit of that we can talk about in a moment that won't blow the book?
Well, there's so much.
I tell you what, let's take this time
to get into it.
Let's take this call, and then I'll let you just kind of give us a very small.
I want to hear from the listeners. Let's find out what people want to know about.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Scott, Los Angeles.
I'm sorry, you said Scott?
That's correct.
Okay, Scott in Los Angeles. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to correct you on something that you said earlier.
Okay.
When you were talking about the Stephenville UFO. And you said that an airplane won't fly below a certain speed. And in fact, an airplane could fly standing still over your head.
Well, if you have the right winds.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right. I just, you know, you were talking about the audience.
But nothing, nothing a mile long.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm not trying to say that this had anything to do with Stephenville. I just wanted to correct what you said because the audience might think that, you know, planes can't fly standing still or even fly backwards, and in fact they can.
They can. Well, what's happening there is the wind, the headwind, is providing their airflow.
Correct.
So you have to have a headwind that provides the airflow of 70 miles an hour that 70 miles an hour would provide, or you drop below stall speed.
Right. That's right. Your ground speed could be zero. It could even be negative. That's right. I just wanted to correct that just to make sure that the audience understood that that was the case because you didn't go into it.
I didn't go into it actually because it's really outside the bounds of what's necessary. But anyway, we do thank you for the comment. Did you have a question for Jim?
No, not at this time. I don't.
Okay.
I wanted to get his book and read it, and until I do, I just don't have anything to really ask. So.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call.
Thank you very much, Scott. That's a very thoughtful and considered answer. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I hesitate to say anything about anybody until I've actually studied what it is they're saying, and not take something out of context.
That's technically true. As long as you have the airspeed, the airflow over the wings, equivalent to traveling forward at 70 miles an hour, then you could stay aloft. At that point, you're pretty much a kite.
If you can get the lift.
Yeah, yeah. At that point, you're pretty much your plane is a kite. I have flown a Cessna 152 with the doors. That's fun.
With the doors open?
Yep. Yep. I had a flight trainer with me who said, so what are you going to do if the cables break? Because the Cessna, the controls are cables. Mm-hmm. So what do you do if the cables break? You got to get down. You got to fly. How are you going to do it? Mm-hmm. And none of your normal controls will work. So you got the throttle and the doors. That's it.
Boy, that's flying by the seat of your pants.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to turn left, you open the left door.
And you know that I once flew the Spirit of St. Louis?
Did you really?
Well, it was a replica, an exact replica that they were sending around the country when it came through Texas. Charlie Hillard, who at that time was the world's aerobatic champion, and I'd done a big story on him, and we were friends, and he took me up in the Spirit of St. Louis, and he said, hey, you've had pilot training, you want to fly it? I said, sure. So I was tree hopping in the Spirit of St. Louis, one of the coolest experiences I've had.
Have you ever flown a crop duster?
No, but I've been in a Pitts Special.
And
I've also been in an ME-109.
I'd like to be in a TR-3B.
Yes.
Yeah, the new triangles. Well, they're not new, but they're the ones they don't admit exist
yet. Yeah, the ones that we don't really have that.
No, we don't have that yet.
No, right. I went up with, again, when I was doing the story on Charlie Hillard, I went with him in a Pitts Special two-seater, and I made the mistake of, over the intercom, I was trying to act like I knew something about it all, and I said, can you do an Immelman? Well, he did, and I just about lost it.
Lou in the UK wants to know if alien agenda, you wrote Alien Agenda several years ago, and he wants to know if your views have changed or modified since you wrote that book.
That's a good question. Basically, I have to say no. We have more incidents and more photographs, more films, okay, but I have not seen anything that substantially changes the UFO picture or what I presented in my book, Alien Agenda, which, by the way, according to my literary agent, has become the top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs in the world. It's been translated into more than a dozen languages.
And when was this book first published?
1997.
I read it.
Like yesterday to me, but that's more than 10 years ago.
Yeah, I read it, but I read it probably somewhere around the year 2000. So it's been a while since I've read it. Mm-hmm. And it's a masterful work. What's your personal theory about extraterrestrials? And we talked about this a little bit when you gave us the example of people going over in a jetliner. Mm-hmm. But in general, do you think that extraterrestrials would be, in general, hostile toward us, dangerous to us, like Stephen Hawking says? Or do you think they'd be pretty much neutral, or you think they'd be benevolent?
Yes. All of that. Okay. Number one, as we spoke about earlier, and I'm in total agreement with you, I think we're talking about multiple species that have, and some still are, interacting with the Earth. And as a result, I think that you're going to have multiple agendas, and some of them may be more benevolent than others. I do think, though, that very much like portrayed in the Star Trek series, subject of a prime directive. In other words, I personally don't think that it's necessarily like a law as we understand a law, and that there's some sort of police peacekeeping force that will come and enforce it. But I think it's more like a understanding among all of the advanced races out there in the galaxy, in the universe, that it is simply not right or proper to overtly interfere with the natural evolution of a species. And I think that's why they keep their distance, and that they do not just land on the White House lawn and say, you know, we come in peace, and all like that. And yet, I think that covertly, there have been some attempts to try to kick us on up the evolutionary ladder and try to help us out a little bit, particularly with some technology, before we blow ourselves up, okay? And I think we ought to be cognizant of this. In fact, there is one line of thought that I find very intriguing that states that the famous Roswell crash was actually deliberately caused in an effort to pass along technology to us, which obviously it did, because right after the Roswell crash in 1947, starting just within a couple of years, we had an explosion, a virtual explosion of technology, which is still exploding all the way till today. Night vision, fiber optics, computer sciences, fiber, you know, computer programs, all kinds of things. Night vision. And so this particular theory is that one of the races, saw this as an opportunity to pass along technology to us without violating the prime directive. Gee, it wasn't our fault. It just had an accident. It crashed, you know. So I find that pretty interesting. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but there really can be little doubt that following the famous incident at Roswell, there was this explosion of technology, which we're still riding on.
Within this last week, I believe, it may go back further, but I think it happened this last week, a high-ranking career CIA officer was giving an interview and made the statement in the interview, after 35 years of service in the CIA, that the Roswell incident absolutely happened, that the craft absolutely was not from this planet, and that they absolutely did recover craft and cadavers. Mm-hmm. And that he had seen actual evidence of that, but he said he would not say any further the details of what he has seen. But he said he doesn't know where the bodies and the craft went. He doesn't know where they are, but it absolutely is true it happened.
Well, ask me if I'm surprised, Kevin.
Are you surprised?
No. And the reason I'm not surprised is because going back to when I began my big-time professional career as an investigative journalist, police reporter for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, that was back in the 60s. Over the years that I worked there, on at least three occasions, you go out to cover one story and you stumble into another one. Mm-hmm. Well, on at least three separate occasions, I came across people who were still living there in Fort Worth who had been stationed at Carswell in 1947. And all three separately told me that, yeah, we were there, and yeah, there were bodies, and yeah, there were pieces of strange metal, and it came through Carswell and went on to Wright-Patterson Air Base. So I pretty well, now, can I prove that? No, because this was just something I heard, but from three separate sources over a period of years. So, yeah. You know, I figured, yeah, that's exactly what happened. But right. How come we can't prove it? How come we don't know this? Well, I don't know if you knew this, but starting year 2000 till about when I retired in 2007, I taught a course on UFOs at the University of Texas at Arlington. And I always use this illustration. I would pass a quarter around amongst the class. Everybody held it, looked at it, and passed it on up. And then I put the quarter and put it back in my pocket. And then a few minutes later, I'd say, I had somebody coached, and they'd say, what about that quarter? And I say, what quarter? And they say, the quarter you put in your pocket. And I say, I didn't put a quarter in my pocket. And it just went on like that with me denying everything. Mm-hmm. And I said, and finally I'd say, well, prove to me that I have a quarter. And they'd all just kind of look at me. And I said, see, you can't prove to me that I even had a quarter unless you could physically pick me up, turn me around, shake that quarter out of my pocket. I said, folks, there's the problem. We can't prove anything because we can't empty the pockets of the federal government of the United States.
Yeah.
There it is.
Absolutely.
There it is.
All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Stuart in Illinois.
Hello, Stuart.
I'd like to ask Jim. I know he's done a lot on the Kennedy, and the same gentleman, Chaz Brandon, that you spoke of a little bit ago, spoke of golfing with the one of the doctors that was in when they brought the gurneys in. If he had ever spoken with one of those doctors that Jim had.
Oh, yeah. The doctors at Parkland?
Yes.
Yes, I have spoken to several of them.
And they said that Kennedy was shot from the front.
Yes, yes, the wound in Kennedy's throat was a puncture wound, okay, an entrance wound. It was
okay,
not an exit.
Let me get both of you gentlemen to hang on just for a moment, and we'll take this break and come right back after this. So, Stuart, just hang on. We'll be right back to you.
To the Kevin Smith Show, a place where you can get information that's out of this world.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. On the telephone with us is Stuart from Illinois, And he had asked a question of our guest, Jim Mars. And Jim, you had just started to answer about the wound on Kennedy's neck.
Right. All of the Parkland doctors there in Dallas said he had a large gaping wound in the right rear portion of his head, which does not show up in the autopsy or the autopsy photographs that are now in the National Archives. Of course, Floyd Reeby, who was the photographer who took the autopsy photographs, has said publicly that the photographs they are now showing us are not the photographs he took. They're fakes. All right? Now, I did talk to several of those doctors and other people at Parkland, and in fact, Dr. Charles Crenshaw became a good friend of mine, particularly after he'd retired as chief of surgery for Peter Smith Hospital, which was the equivalent of Parkland over in Fort Worth. He was well thought of, an honest man of great integrity. And I bet you've never heard this story. He was the one who happened to be on duty that Sunday when they brought Lee Harvey Oswald in to Parkland after having been gut shot by Jack Ruby. And he was operating on him, trying to save his life. And they came in and said, "You have a phone call." And he said, "I'm in the middle of trying to save this fellow's life. I can't take a phone call." They said, "It's the President of the United States." And he said he went to the phone, and it was Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson, after a few cursory remarks, said, "Is he going to live?" And he said, "Well, I'm not real sure, you know." And he said, "Told me all the time he's thinking, I need to get back there to continue my work." And he said the last thing Johnson said was, "Make sure he does not leave that room alive." How do you like that? There's a little something you're not going to hear on the mainstream media.
Well, Stuart, does that answer your question?
Sure does. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Uh-huh.
We have a pretty long flash message from Dean in England, and it gets into makes some pretty overtly political statements, which we don't do here, but I will try to give you the gist.
Okay.
JFK, he says it's known that his father used the mob to get JFK elected, and therefore his presidency was basically illegitimate. And he says, so if the current administration has done things that make it illegitimate, would you as an American back an illegitimate benevolent presidency over an elected corporate shill? And if not, then anarchy is the only chance we have. Okay. So what's your response to that without getting into too much politics here?
Oh, man. Yeah, he's opened a whole can of worms there. But yes, there has been political skullduggery all down the line. But I think there's a difference between using the mob and using Johnson's influence in Texas to sway a few hundred votes in the 1960 election, which resulted in Kennedy being elected. And even though the mob may have muscled some people into voting in Chicago and in West Virginia, and then Johnson strong-armed some people into voting in Texas, and it helped get Kennedy elected in one of the narrowest elections in U.S. history, the point is, nevertheless, he was elected. So he was legitimate as any other election. I can remember some of the ones back, say, at the time of Andrew Jackson. They get votes by bringing out kegs of liquor, and they give everybody free drink if they go vote for their candidate. I mean, this is nothing new. This is the wild and woolly role of politics in America. But that's an entirely separate issue in my mind from someone who not only was not elected due to computer fraud, but is not even constitutionally qualified to be president, and it has nothing to do with where he was born.
Okay, to the telephone caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Good evening, Mr. Morris.
Howdy.
You know, ever since the Warren Commission came out, I quit believing in the government. I mean, it just
good,
was...
Good for you. Good for you.
But, you know, it seems that, getting back to your new book, it seems like there's a ruling class, and it's not exactly, you know, the president or whatever. There's people behind right. that. And I've
yeah.
often
yeah, they like to call themselves blue bloods.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I often thought that these ancient gods and stuff, the Greek gods, were actually, alien astronauts.
Well, that's a good thought, particularly since some of the oldest writings we have, come from ancient Sumer, the Sumerian civilization, which predated Egypt by several thousand years. And that, of course, took place in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, which is today, of course, in Iraq, one of the few places on the earth you can't just freely go and visit. Here's the thing. We actually can know more about these ancient Sumerians than we'll ever know about the Egyptians or the Romans, for that matter, because both the Egyptians and the Romans kept meticulous records, but they wrote it down on paper or papyrus. And over the years, they either got destroyed in wars or it burned up or it just deteriorated and fell apart. Some ancient Sumerians, they used cuneiform to impress their stylus into a clay tablet and then baked it and turned it into rock. And these things still exist. There's a 500,000 of them scattered in museums all around the world, and only about 20% of them have been translated. But what the ones that have been translated, every time the ancient Sumerians tried to say where they came from and what they knew about history, they said that 420 years ago, the Anunnaki came. Well, the Anunnaki translates as those who came from the heavens and landed on the earth. So there you go.
You mean 420,000 years, right?
Yeah, 420,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and of course, that flew in the face of scientific evidence at the time, back in the 1800s, which thought that the humans could only be traced back, actually modern humans, to about 50,000 years, and ancient primitive humans, Homo erectus, back to maybe 100,000 years. So it didn't sit there. So they said, well, that's their mythology. But now we are finding at places like in South Africa, in Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, and the Red Deer Cave people, we're finding that there is evidence that there were humans doing incredible things back, 20, 30, 50,000, 100,000 years ago. So it could be that the ancient Sumerians were simply trying to recount history as they knew it, not just making up mythological fairy tale stories.
I believe that, but I don't think that the average person's going to hear about, just like Kevin said, if a reporter, if a downed UFO in New York City, that the reporter would never report it.
Well, yeah, and let me give you another perfect example. Having recently been in Egypt and visiting the Sphinx and the pyramids, I can assure you that all around the Sphinx, on the ground that covers the Sphinx, on the Sphinx itself, and to some degree on the Great Pyramid, there is quite obviously water erosion, which means it's set out under heavy rains. Scientists tell us that there has not been any heavy rains on the Giza Plateau for more than 10,000 years. What does that mean? That means the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid were in existence before the Egyptian civilization ever came to be. Okay, now the geologists have verified this. There's no problem. But the Egyptologists still refuse to listen to that. Why? Because they have too much invested in their theories and in their books and in their textbooks and in the tourism that goes to Egypt and everything else. So even though the evidence is right there in front of everybody, you will not read and you will not hear from some university expert or some government expert who will admit that the Egyptians did not build the pyramids. And so that's happening right now in this period, in some future date when people are more rational and are ready to listen to the facts, it'll just be common knowledge and accepted that the pyramids and the Sphinx existed before the Egyptian civilization came along.
I agree with that. One other point I wanted to make, you said that the ETs are not interfering with us. I believe that there is a group of them that have dominated the Earth, and they're reptilian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about David Icke now.
Yeah, I'm
not prepared to say he's wrong, but we're going to have to just get a little bit more proof and more evidence. But I think you're going to find some of that in my new book, Our Occulted History, which is due out the early part of next year. And I think the evidence is slowly, slowly emerging that mankind has been on this earth a lot longer than we've been taught, that there have been multiple civilizations, perhaps highly technological civilizations, long before our recorded history, and that the history of Earth and the history of humanity is much different than what we've been taught in school. Of course, things are a lot different now than what I was taught in school. I hate to show my age, but I can remember, and I grew up and was educated and was out of college before we landed on the moon. And we were taught that there was no atmosphere on the moon, and that there was no magnetic field on the moon, and that the moon had no water. Well, now we know that, yes, it does have a thin atmosphere, it does have a weak magnetic field, and yes, there is water on the moon. So, you know, everything we think we know, we may not really know it.
Why can't they just tell the truth?
Well, because there's too much invested in governments and academia, which depends on governments largely and depends on the big corporations for their funding and their donations. And there's just, and besides that, I guess what it boils down to, Jerome, is that knowledge is power. And whoever wants to hold and keep the power has to control the knowledge. So they don't want us poor old useless eaters to know what's really going on, or we might just revolt.
Let me throw this in. People don't tell you this, but you can observe it. There's actually two separate human races alive on the Earth right now. Did you know that, Jerome?
No, I didn't, Kevin.
Yeah, there's Homo sapiens and Homo dumbasses. And we elect.
I know which one's the most numerous.
And we,
yeah, that's, you've got it. That I know which one is dominant.
Yeah, and we elect
it's
a very large
idiocracy.
Number.
It's ruled by idiocracy.
We elect a very large number of the Homo dumbasses to high positions, and
right.
So that's part of the problem.
That's right. But then,
well,
what are you saying there, Kevin?
I'm looking
You're saying
forward
we
to
elected them. So actually, the problem comes
book.
Back to we, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Okay, Jerome, Jim was talking. I couldn't hear you. So what did you say?
Oh, I wanted to say, Mr. Morris, I'm looking forward to reading your new book. I read your other books, and I found them thoroughly entertaining. And thank you for being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Jerome.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we will do so, and we will be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is none other than Jim Mars. And we have a caller on the phone, Jim. So let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Jim, I'm going to make a statement. I'm going to ask you to comment on it.
All righty.
the evidence we seek and the evidence we receive will lead us in a direction. From that evidence, we're going to draw a conclusion and possibly lead ourselves to believe in something. However, for intellectual integrity, we must always consider the possibility that we might be wrong. That's my statement.
I wholeheartedly agree. In fact, I urge everyone to be skeptical of everything, including myself. I don't ask for anybody to believe what I'm saying. Read my book, Alien Agenda. Check out the footnotes. Go look at the prime sources, just like I did. Start at talking to people, and but keep a skeptical attitude. But keep a skeptical attitude towards all comers. Be skeptical of the government pronouncements. Be skeptical of scientific and academic pronouncements. Be skeptical of the corporate mass media pronouncements. And start thinking for yourself. That's all I've ever asked for.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, sir.
There we go.
All right, Brent.
Thanks, Kevin.
You bet. Thanks for the call. We're on final approach. That means we only have 3 or 4 minutes left for you to make your call if you're going to call. Because we go beyond that point, it'll be way too close to the end of the show for you to call and ask your question and then for Jim to respond to it. So the phone lines are open at 623-444-5889. And if you call right now, then we perhaps can get you on the air. 623-444-5889.
Especially if I talk in hyperspeech.
Yeah. Is hyperspeech faster?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Talk like this.
Compressed English.
You got that? Got that? And man, that was quick.
I got it. Now, in reverse speech, I wonder what all that said.
It said, the devil will get you.
Jim, you're working on
several
books.
I'm sorry if I sound like I'm being... bringing too much levity to your show, Kevin, but remember what I said earlier about, well, I think one of the things that really distinguishes us humans from the non-humans is that we really have a good sense of humor, or at least I hope we do. My wife says that mine's a little weak, but she doesn't like my one-liners, but we do have the ability, and when you stop and look at things, that things really are, if you were step back and weren't so caught up in the emotional swirl of national events, politics, and national dialogues about various issues, if you weren't so caught up in it, you sit back and you look, it really does get pretty funny.
Yeah, you'd have to laugh because the world is so slapstick.
Oh, it really is. You got all these people out there who are just literally killing people because they don't want them to perform abortions, which they say will kill unborn people, and yet they don't seem to have any problem about going around to other countries and bombing the hell out of living people and children, you know. So it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
All right, let's go to the telephone for our last call. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hello, Mr. Mars. This is Victoria.
Howdy.
Washington. Howdy.
Gloria.
I just wanted to let you know that the first book I read by you was Ruled by Secrecy, and that was just a mind-blowing book, and I've been hooked on your books ever since. And I just wanted to thank you, and I am just so wowed out that you're still doing this and you know, fighting the good fight, and I just want to thank you for everyone who knows you, and on behalf of those who I hope will get to know about your work soon. And so your next book is the name of it is again, What and When?
And you're going to love it. It's Our Occulted History. And it has nothing, and I start off by saying, this book has nothing to do with vampires, werewolves, witches, or Satan worshippers. This is the occulted used as we use it in astronomical terms. When the moon eclipses the sun, that's called an occultation, okay? So it means it's masked or it's hidden, all right? So this is going to be, what is our hidden history? What's being kept from us? And is it Gloria?
No, Victoria.
Victoria.
Victoria. I'm sorry, Victoria. Victoria, you're going to love it because it's going to bring Rule by Secrecy right up to the New World Order.
Well, I already love it, and I adore you, and thank you so much. I'll get off the line so someone else can call in. Thanks to both of you. Good night.
Good night. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, we, as a matter of fact, do have time if you call right now. But you have to hurry, and when you call and I bring you on the air, you'll have to speak rapidly. You're working on 4 books right now, right?
Yep, just about, actually. 2 under contract and 2 there are things that I'm just wanting to do.
I see. Okay, and so the new book is going to be out when? Our Occulted History is going to be out when?
That'll be out either right at the very end of the year or more probably the first of next year.
Okay. All right. So sometime after New Year's.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not that far away.
No.
In case you haven't noticed, folks, we're now in the downhill side of the year. Just entered it. Just topped the hill, and we've started down toward the end now. So we've got about a little less than 6 months, and then we ought to be able to read this book. Jim, this is calling on you for some speculation, and I understand that. But, you know, for as long as I can remember, which is a pretty long time, I'm 58, I can remember back till the time I was 2. So for 56 years, people have been saying that we're, you know, the government disclosing what they know about UFOs and extraterrestrials is just around the corner. We're almost there. Do
yeah.
you think it's ever going to happen?
Yes, I do. In fact, hold on to your hats, folks, because I think it may be coming up reasonably soon, like possibly as soon as later this year. I think from now till December 31st is going to be one wild ride. And then if it's not by then maybe within the next couple of 3 years or so. I think we're getting very close. And that's why, I don't know, I don't think it's just me. I think time seems to be speeding up. I can remember when, you know, major news events happened maybe once or twice a year, okay? And now it seems like they're just coming, you know, every few weeks. I think things are speeding up. I think things are coming to a head. And I think the folks out there who have been involved with this planet for millennia, I think they know it too. And I think everybody's rushing to get a seat for the third act.
Outstanding. I hope you're right. Now, we are now faced with the end of the show. I want to thank you for being with us, and hope you'll come back and talk with us again in the not-too-distant future, although I know you have a very busy schedule with writing the 4 books. But I hope you'll come back and be with us. It's always a pleasure when you're here, and thank you for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's been my pleasure, and it was great hearing from some of your audience, and it's obvious to me that you have a pretty erudite thinking audience, and I honor them and I honor you for that.
All right, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this flight of the KSS Starship in for a landing. I'd like to talk with you for just a moment after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Jim Mars. Always a pleasure, always interesting, always providing us information that we didn't have. And that one little bit of information right there at the end that he thinks that this disclosure thing is going to happen possibly before the end of the year. Wow, I hope he's right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.